makes a difference.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. Little horse today, because I did a six-hour nonstop webinar yesterday that we had a lot of people listening. I want to apologize for all the people, the thousands who couldn't get on. It's just that we had maxed our bandwidth as much as possible. But you can go to prn.fm and download it today. So if I'm a little lower than normal in my volume, it's because my resting my vocal cords. Because I also counseled for 4 hours yesterday. So today, however, is a new day and a new perspective. I wrote a commentary that I'm going to share with you today, especially those of you who are concerned that so many things are going wrong, that what's the use? What's the use? We're just individuals. We can't change anything. We don't have power. It's not true. It is true that everything is going wrong, but it's not true you have to be a part of it. So I'm going to share a commentary today. I hope you appreciate it, and if you do, share it with other people. You're going to learn about calcitriol today. That's a form of vitamin D. And guess what? From National University of Singapore, published in a peer-reviewed journal, they're saying what? They're saying that it can help prevent COVID-19. On the one hand, Anthony Fauci and our official CDC and FDA are claiming nobody can say anything about preventing COVID-19, especially not using something unproven like vitamin C and D. The trouble is, I've written several articles. I've done at least 19 broadcasts using only peer-reviewed literature from the Library of Medicine's own official government-sanctioned science, meaning it's good science, showing that vitamin D will help prevent and will help treat COVID-19, along with intravenous vitamin C and oral vitamin C and zinc and astragalus in particular. So we were right, they were wrong. Think of all the people who died who didn't have to in the last 4 months, had nursing homes, done anything that would be considered reasonable, and that is putting everyone at high risk of normal disease on an immune modulating protocol. So we can't change the stupidity and hubris and errors of the past, but we can learn. So here's the deal. Anyone out there who knows someone who manages a nursing home or assisted living center, or even a hospice care for that matter, because I've actually taken people out of hospices where they went to die and brought them back to life. I will provide you a detailed protocol for the COVID virus or any other virus or any other disease, congestive heart failure, cancers, to help these people. So it is not inevitable that someone who has a medically untreatable condition must therefore die. And that's what it is today. When you go into a nursing home, you're going in to die. Assisted living center, you're going in to assist yourself until you have to go into a nursing home and die. These are the last stages of life. And of course, hospice care is the final end of it. But I want you to all do something today. Now remember, you have to look at this from a philosophical perspective. If every single one of 100,000 UFO sightings were something else, some other type of highly skilled flying object that we just weren't aware of, or weather balloons. That's what we were taught for a long time. But what if they found one was real? Just one out of 100,000. Then you prove it's real. All it takes is one. Bannister breaking the 4-mile mile, you proved it could be done. And then others follow suit. So go to prn.fm, scroll down. On the left-hand side, I believe it's left-hand side, you'll see testimonies. Now, these are all from one health retreat, one. And I hadn't watched it before. Someone had put it up there. And in there, there is a woman, stage 4 breast cancer. She's being treated at a highly respected university hospital on Long Island. And she chose not to use chemotherapy or radiation or surgery. Instead, I put her on a protocol. She asked, and I put her on a protocol. And she stuck, as she, you will hear her say, I stuck 100% to Gary's protocol. She went back in a year later, and her oncologist was flabbergasted and said, whatever you're doing, keep doing it, because you're the only woman cancer patient or breast cancer patient that didn't take chemotherapy that survived stage 4 breast cancer. You're the only one. I checked it up in all the medical records. And how'd you do it? And she said, I was on a Garinol protocol. Okay, what's unusual? That was 30 years ago. She'll say it was 30 years ago. And she came back just for a tone-up to get back into the healthy living again. Not that she was unhealthy. So all it takes is one. But then we have Utrice Lead. That's two. Well, we have thousands. All right, we have tens of thousands. In fact, we're collecting all of our testimonials right now. And I have to bring someone down to Florida to go through our formal archives. I have four different types of machines, that 1-inch beta, 2-inch, 1/2-inch, and take all those health support groups, of which there were hundreds, with tens of thousands, actually more than that, over 100,000 people participated over the decades, and go through the before and after, and then a year follow-up that we filmed. So if someone wants proof, does this stuff work, why don't you talk with a 24-year-old multiple sclerosis, advanced multiple sclerosis patient when she just finishes the marathon, and you see her coming across this finish line, and you hear her say, I just did, you know, a marathon, that she couldn't walk a straight line. There were 3 MS patients that major improvement, but there's more. Every year, AIDS reversed it completely. So isn't it time that we, meaning you, who practice healthy living, and all of the good nurses and dentists and all the nutritionists and the health coaches and all the homeopaths, chiropractors, isn't it time that you stopped hiding in a closet with your head bowed to this orthodox god of medicine and realize they're not able to do with their limited minds and limited behavior and absolutely completely limited and terrified protocols, and they either open up or let the public open up to us. No longer should you, or I will not, apologize for doing what medicine has been able to. Now, that doesn't mean we don't need medicine. It should be a cooperation. It should be freedom of choice. It should be what is in the patient's best interest. But for all of us who've succeeded where they have failed, we are criticized for succeeding and they are praised and rewarded for failure. Think of that for a moment. Wrap your mind around that. We reward the people who fail and kill, and we demean and deny and abuse those who heal. Is there something wrong with this? We mock and ridicule the peacemakers coming with love and peace and spiritual values, and we reward and regale and make new heroes those who come armed to destroy. How does that work? Well, it isn't. Nor has it. That's going to be part of the commentary you're going to hear from me in a little bit. But in any case, so we were the first in the United States, if not the world, to tell you, you could prevent this by taking vitamin D, vitamin C in high doses, like, you know, if I was working with someone, I know how much I took, but I don't tell people what I take. And mind you, we had 26 people all in quarantine for 60 to 70 days. Nobody got sick. Everybody's thriving in their health. And yet no one's asking, gee, how did you have that many people? Nobody got sick. And these are all senior citizens. Because we build up the immune system. It has nothing to do with your age. It has to do with comorbidities. And that's the key. So we've been lied to, manipulated. They have weaponized the COVID crisis, which is no more deadly thus far worldwide on total deaths, because we're studying the statistics, than the annual flu. But look at the power they've taken over us. Look at our rights they've taken over us. Look at how they've destroyed whole economies. Look at how they destroyed tens of millions of people's income and put people into debt penalties, at the same time empowering and bailing out the banks that own the credit debt, credit card debt, and all of the debt that people have bought things with, necessity like food. You go to a store, you use your credit card, and you buy some. Who do you owe that money to? You owe it to the bank. Who gets bailed out? The bank gets bailed out. Who has to pay 20% interest? And if you can't pay it all at once, and then you pay 38%, you do. Who do they protect? They protect the bank. Who do they not give a damn about? And it's not about race. Get over that. It's about inequality. Can't we wrap our minds around a larger issue of anything? Not when we're trying to weaponize something for political gain. And that's what this is about. They weaponized the Russia hoax, which was a complete fraud and hoax. We proved that from day one, that it was Mark Rich who stole the computer drive and printed files and gave it to Ambassador Murray in the park across American University. He, in turn, got it to Julian Assange. And yet, no one would acknowledge that, because he was a supporter of Bernie Sanders, and he didn't like the fact that Bernie Sanders, who would have been president today, just think of this, you so-called wake persons, Bernie Sanders would have been president today, far better president than Clinton or Trump. He had the election stolen from him illegally by Hillary Clinton and her whole group of conspirators at the National Democratic Group. And they had to come up with a scheme to do it. And that's why we've had 3.5 nonstop years of this nonsense. And all William Binney and all the whistleblowers and the national security people who are retired, Ray McGovern, all did an expose on this and said it was not the Russians. It couldn't have been, and they explained why they couldn't have hacked it. And why didn't they ever turn over the computer to the FBI? Because they knew that the FBI would test it and see that it wasn't someone from outside who did it. It was someone working. Rich, he was angry. Or he got shot conveniently. Isn't it amazing how many people get shot conveniently and by robbery, but they never stole anything from him? Never sold his watch and money. That's how it works. In any case, just being realized you're being played and have been at every turn. That's why I'm asking you, walk away from all media. Walk away from the New York Times. Walk away from CNN. Walk away from NBC, CBS, the Washington Post. Walk away from Google. Walk away from Wikipedia. Walk away from all these. That's a protest that you can do that can have meaning when enough people do it. Because when we told you, take your vitamin D, 25 to 50,000 units, and vitamin C up to bowel tolerance, which is probably about 15,000 milligrams, and zinc at 60 milligrams a day, and astragalus at 1,000 to 1,500 milligrams, echinacea 200, 300 milligrams a day, and licorice extract about 20 drops a day, and you could have built a person's immune system so strong that even when they're affected or impacted by the virus, they can survive. And that's why younger people have stronger immune systems, and 90% of all the people who've had the coronavirus didn't even know it. They were asymptomatic. That says that it's measure of degree less lethal. But they can't tell you the truth because they're profiting from the pandemic. And the big payout is it bailed out all of the failed corporations and banks, trillions of dollars. Nothing to you, a little paltry $1,200 check. But now, in the next month, all that back rent comes due, and watch how everyone who owes that is foreclosed on. That's your government. In any case, the good news is that vitamin D works. National University of Singapore, published in the peer-reviewed journal, shows it. And It goes into the mechanisms of it, but just know, take your vitamin D every day and get sun. Also, I've been telling you for a long time to eat grapes. Grapes are great. The grape skin and grape seed, really terrific. Have grape juice, organic grape juice. Concord grape juice is great. I like to take, after a hot run, you know, where you're really burning, and you put some ice cubes, and I do this all the time. I fill up a tray of grape juice, or it might be lemonade, fresh-made lemonade. And if you want a sweetness, we have a little stevia. And then you put the ice cubes that are made out of either grape ice cubes or lemonade, whatever you like, into a blender, and then add some water and blend it, and that's a great slush that cools you down and it quenches your thirst, and especially anything with lemon. But the grapes are phenomenal for you. This is from Federal University of Rio de Janeiro and the State University of the Rio de Janeiro. The two different universities found that compounds inside of the grapes are capable of acting against more than half the cases of breast cancer. And it is the resveratrol, R-E-S, vera, V-E-R-A, trol, T-R-O-L, three syllables, resveratrol. That's the bioactive compound found in grapes and red wine. And scientists were able, for the first time, to inhibit the agglomeration of mutant versions of the P53 protein, a structure present in about 60% of tumors, and to prevent migration and proliferation of breast cancer cells. That's a big deal. So for all the women, by taking grapes in grape juice, you could help prevent breast cancer. And if you have breast cancer, then take high concentrations of it. I'd be taking 1,000 milligrams of resveratrol spread throughout the day. Just another piece of the puzzle. Also, from Southeastern University in China, researchers found that lutein, L-U-T-E-O-L-I-N, can inhibit the proliferation of esophageal cancer cells. All right, and this was published in the peer-reviewed Journal of Food Science and Human Wellness. And easy to find. So it kills the esophageal carcinoma cells by inducing cell apoptosis and increase the expression of capsaicin 3 and 9. These simply biomarkers that when you destroy them, like with turmeric, or vitamin C, or vitamin A, it helps prevent the cancer from going any further. And also from Guru University of Science in India, published in the Journal of Psychopharmacology, they found that alternative and complementary medicines are good for kidney disorders. How about that? That's good news. So that's the latest on health and healing. We are 18 minutes into our program. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, a special commentary for something for us to think about at a time when we seem to be faced with one crisis after another and nothing being done except people just angry and rioting. But all I'm asking you to do is this. Of all the things wrong in your life, why don't we start to prioritize what we need to help us through our crisis? So if you're dying of diabetes or cancer or could, if you're broke and have no money to pay your bills and facing foreclosure or homelessness, if you're hungry and malnourished, if you can't live in certain areas because of flooding, tornadoes, hurricanes, devastation of your domicile, isn't it time that we took a look at what our real priorities are and started to demand those also be addressed? Back in a moment. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome you. I'm Gary Nall. By the way, I found something when I was looking through my tapes recently, It was a race. There was a whole series of races in this one box I hadn't ever seen. First time I'd ever seen them. And I put it on, and it's an indoor national championship. Now, these are tough competitors. They're the best in the country in every competition, and whether it's pole vaulting or shot putting, hurdles. In my case, the long race, which is the 3,000 meter. And it starts with the best in America in my group. And we get up to the line, and the whole track is full. Gun goes off, and off we go. Now, I want you to watch this for two reasons. A, because I trained hard for this. I mean, I did some exceptional tough stuff. You know, carrying a nine-pound gallon. A gallon of water is 9 pounds. In each hand, 25 flights, 25 times, then staying on a verse climber for 2 hours, nonstop at highest resistance, and a lot of it, plus all the road work. And so I felt I was in the best shape I could be. And so I took a commanding lead. In fact, the person in second place, I looped twice. But I set a world record, but it didn't count. Because you'll see that twice, the counter, the guy who's supposed to be watching you come through and he tells you how many laps you have to go, he wasn't paying attention. And you see, I go right by him and he doesn't even notice I'm there. And as a result, he didn't pull down the tag that says 8 laps, 7 laps, etc. And he did it twice. So when it came up to my finishing lap, it became the bell lap. They give you a bell or a gun, means you got one more lap to go. And I started to stop. And they said, no. You have one. I said, I don't have another lap. They said, yes, you do. And so I went ahead and did another lap, or I'd have been disqualified. All day long, the chief judge wouldn't allow all the people. I had two people there, Lucy Alvarez and Queenie Thompson, were running a walking club. They both won. Everyone who went from our group won because we trained tough. And Sid Howard was there, the greatest miler in the world, and he was keeping track. So all of their cards compared, exact time per lap. She didn't care. So fortunately, the meet director finally came 4 hours later. We put down a little video. We watched it and counted the laps all together. And sure enough, he said, yes, you're right. You did an extra lap. They didn't count you. But no, the camera is not on the stop watch, so I couldn't give you the world record. I said, okay. You know, mistakes happen. It's all right. And unfortunately, it happened twice in my career. But it would have been a low 6 minute mile race walking, meaning you don't have the benefit of gliding, meaning 1 foot must always be on the floor. So that would have been equivalent to a 4 minute mile for a master athlete. So take a look at it. I think you'll see what it means. Now, why is this important? Because there's another film there of a 15K. That's a 9.3 mile race. And it was on Long Island in the middle of the summer, August, scorching day, up around 100 degrees. And the best athletes in America were there, including members of the Olympic team. And I won that also, first master. And you see the award ceremony. I was averaging a 7 minute mile out there that day. And you see the other athletes and you see the forms, you see how hard it is. But there were some really good athletes from our club there who also won. Susan Travlin won, great athlete. None of this is on Wikipedia. Now, this is what's important. I've done, 600 races. I haven't lost a race in 32 years, and I'm training now hard to compete for. I'm going to try to break 4 state records in the next 12 months, and I'm going to train for that because I'm going to prove that the older you get, you can also get faster because the assumption is the older you get, the slower you're going to get, and I'm just going to challenge it. Let's see if I'm right or wrong. In any case, you'll also see as of today on PRN.FM under video bios, we've added 2 new ones, one on my education and one on my consumer activism. We're now up, I believe, it's 16 video bios, meaning showing how I've mastered 15 to 16 different fields and not just mastered them, but have been acknowledged, got lifetime achievement awards in 3 of them, etc. Not a single thing on Wikipedia. In fact, every time they're given something by my audience to show that they didn't include something positive, it's immediately rejected. And lies galore are on there. So Wikipedia, in my opinion, is a fraud. And we are suing them. And boy, if this gets into court, which we know it will because we're suing the individual editors, we're going to hold a whole press conference. We're going to expose all these editors and show what's really behind it. Who's behind it? Is pharmaceutical industry behind it? The hit groups behind the pharmaceutical industry? Yeah, all that's coming out. So I want you to see what I've never posted my entire 53-year career. Never, not once. What I've done to achieve things. You would think that I fell off the back of a cart somewhere and picked up a piece of paper and held it up and said, this is my college degree. They denigrate everything. Watch my educational bio. And you'll see that of the, I think, 36,000 graduates, mainly educators, dozens and dozens became presidents of universities and colleges. And I'm the only one graduate. And there it is. You'll see it. You'll read it. Outstanding alumni in excellence in public service. Of all, that's not just being a magna cum laude, summa cum laude. It means you're the only graduate in the history of the university. What if that was you and you got that from Harvard? No one else had ever gotten it, but they won't acknowledge anything. Nothing good will they acknowledge. So we're going to ram it down their throat. Every good thing that we have done going up there, documented, because that's going to be used against them in a court of law. Because the jury is going to ask, did you know or have reason to know that Dr. Null had achieved these things that you were saying he did not achieve and denigrated him? And they are going to have to say yes or they will have lied because they will have been given everything, all proof. So this is how you take on the establishment. And it is the establishment. It's Silicon Valley. It's Google. It's Facebook. It is the big pharma industries. It is Wall Street because they all control the public information they want. That's why we have misinformation on Wikipedia. That's why they denigrate Deepak Chopra. Anyone who it represents a threat to them, real or imagined, they're going to destroy. And I represent one of the biggest threats because I have the largest audience of any holistic person in the world. And that's why they come after me. Now I'm going after them. So you educate yourself. Look at the video bios. Look at those wins. You wouldn't know that I have was outstanding athlete of the year, year after year, broke all these American records, 5 indoor records in 1 year in the mile. You wouldn't know that because none of it was allowed to go on there. They didn't even tell you I'm an athlete. Nothing. So it's by omission and commission. Watch it for yourself. It'll also be fun to watch. That's up on PRN.fm, as well as those people who were cured. None of that is up there either. These are real people with real diseases, with all their medical background. You would never know that existed. So it's time. What is the message here? The time is now that we stop pretending that there is only one medical reality, one truth towards healing, the orthodox model, chemotherapy, radiation, surgery, or medication. That is not the case. Now, there are cases where that does work, and I support that. But there's a lot more cases where alternative and complementary medicine works, especially at prevention. You don't take chemotherapy to prevent a disease. You don't have surgery, you know, to prevent a disease. You don't have radiation to prevent a disease. But you do have diet to prevent disease, nutrients to prevent disease, and the hundreds of thousands of studies in the peer-reviewed literature on PubMed prove that. So that shows you what kind of denialism we're living in. We are living in complete denialism. You have to be aware of this because sometimes making a choice should you change from A to B could end up causing you your life. Now to my commentary. This is posted on PRN.fm. You can go to it and download it. If you agree with it, share it. Remember, we do no advertising, no publicity, and I don't do any public relations ever. No interviews. I refused all interviews since the year 2000. So I believe in word of mouth. This is entitled, The End Is Not Near. We have passed it. For the past 5 decades, I've been a consumer and social activist, an investigative journalist, and a national radio host. Over the years, I've organized and led dozens of demonstrations to expose the crimes of corporate and government interest and malfeasance. I'd always believed that consistently taking the initiative to bring to public awareness the faults and failures of our nation and its policies would engender constructive change, at least those who are open to it. However, recently I have been in deep reflection and introspection to probe an essential question. What went wrong? For example, after promoting the benefits of adopting a plant-based healthy diet for a half a century, I now question whether even 5% of the population has embraced a vegetarian philosophy and actually follows it. The U.S. is the most morbidly obese and overweight nation per population in the developed world. Our life expectancy has reversed, and many children born today will not outlive their parents. We are a nation with widespread inequality and buried in colossal debt at every level of society. Even the professional class, the lawyers, doctors, engineers, the scientists, the business people who are highly educated, now find themselves in a precarious situation with the new recession and uncertainties. When the economy was growing, they embarked on a mad spending spree they felt was necessary to maintain an unrealistic standard of living. Now, with the pandemic, millions in the professional class are unable to service their debt. In other words, they have been spending more than they earn and can't keep up, but are afraid to make changes. It will change their social status. But it is not just the upper middle class and moderately wealthy that are faced with this predicament to remain financially afloat. All of our governments, federal, state, and city, have been on a massive spending binge as well. Yet in general, government expenditures have not benefited either the country or its citizens. Have you seen billions of dollars spent in any city to rehabilitate it, to bring in whole areas of industrial growth where local consumers can find work and buy product in their local community instead of importing stuff from other countries like China? The answer is no. Have we hired people to reforest our country? No. Have we done anything like the Civil Conservation Corps of FDR's plan in the 1930s? No. Have we tried to take buildings that were no longer being used and reuse them for communities or assisted living or for the poor? The answer is no. As a nation, we are both economically and morally bankrupt. Nor is anything essential being done to reverse global warming trends and the further destruction of the environment. The Trump administration has signed more cruel orders to destroy the remaining ecological fragility that we all depend upon. In fact, four of the nation's most polluting nations, Brazil, China, India, and the United States, have witnessed an increase in greenhouse gas emissions instead of a decrease. Because nobody wants to change, and since nothing is mandated, it's all voluntary, no one is volunteering to do anything. Maybe next year, maybe in 100 years. We don't have a next year. We don't have 10 years. We don't have 5 years. Look around you. Look at the unique and remarkable things that are happening. Hail so large that if it hit you, it would kill you. Brand new. We're having huge chunks of hail. We've never had that before. And although politicians readily state their cares and concerns about the environment and human life, their actions speak just the opposite. Democratic Republic does not matter. To the contrary, the old 19th century mantra of capitalist growth that Marx warned about remains, grow the economy in the name of progress by depleting whatever natural resources and human capital are available in order to prevent the gross domestic product from falling. So the only thing that we serve is work, earn, spend. Nothing else matters. As a result, what many conscientious environmentalists, economists, and scientists have been warning about for decades is now unfolding at a more rapid pace. The planet has entered positive feedback loops that cannot be stopped. Politically correct speeches to secure false promises of hope do not affect any of the climate tipping points, such as the loss of polar ice and glaciers. Every wise environmental activist and educator who has warned that we must approach our lives from a more austere and even spiritual perspective has been ignored or mocked. Rather than divert funds toward efforts that are in critical demand for the survival of our planet and species, there are always other priorities. So what are our priorities? Let's just be realistic about it, because these are priorities costing billions of dollars per year. Well, how about supporting genocide in Yemen by helping the completely corrupt genocidal government of Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates in destroying the poorest country in the Middle East? 21 million Yemenites are at risk of dying. Hundreds of thousands of children are starving to death. And yet we do not find that a priority. No marches for the children of Yemen. No marches for the people of Yemen. And Israel's apartheid against Palestinians. Now, when you capture a group of people in one place, meaning you do not allow them to leave, you restrict their movements, you give them none of the basic necessities of life, they don't have clean water to drink, they don't have regular electricity, they don't have medicines in all their hospitals. In effect, they are in an extreme apartheid place. And we're not talking about a few hundred or thousand. We're talking about nearly 5 million people in a tiny area. It is the most humanly packed, congested area on the planet. And yet we give Israel billions of dollars a year. They are the number one country in the world spying on the United States, meddling in our elections, but we won't talk about that. Every U.S. senator, including Bernie Sanders and all the so-called progressives, trust me, founding the Progressive Radio Network, being a progressive when I stopped being a liberal because I saw how corrupt the liberalism had been under the Clintons and Gores and others, we wanted to look for the truth, not political identity. None of these people are true progressives. As a result, what you have is they signed a loyalty oath to Israel, even making it a crime punishable by imprisonment and fine if you criticize Israel. So now any criticism of Israel, you're called anti-Semitic, even if you're pro-Israel and pro-Jewish. Remember, Zionism is not a religion. The founder of Zionism was an atheist. It is a political movement, and not all Israelis are pro-zealots towards Zionism. There's a very strong and viable human rights and humanistic movement in Israel itself and in the United States, but it's one of those things you won't talk about. So why don't we talk about those people of color? Because those are not Caucasian. Those are people who are being treated in the worst possible manner. What about our Middle East wars, overthrowing social movements overseas to install regimes that will bow to Washington's hegemony, revamping our nuclear weapons arsenal when we shouldn't have nuclear weapons at all, huge bailouts to the most corrupt private corporations on Wall Street in Silicon Valley, the Nobel Peace Prize awarded to Barack Obama, who speaks of hope and change, but was directly involved in escalating or creating our wars overseas and overthrowing legitimate democratic governments. Think of the tens of thousands of people living in the most prosperous and peaceful state in Africa, of the 54 countries in Africa, Libya. More freedom for women than any other Islamic nation. You could go to jail if you insulted a woman. You had free education, free medical care. If you couldn't find a job, you were given a salary commensurate to what you would have been making had you been employed. No wars, no terrorism, and no debt, and taking the entirety of the African nation in a new direction off the dollar standard to the golden era standard. And then he was killed. Why no challenge to that? Why is that allowed? Why doesn't that count? If you're going to go after Andrew Jackson, and I believe you should, he was responsible for the Trail of Tears. In fact, my great-great-grandmother was a full-blooded Cherokee Indian from North Carolina, eastern North Carolina, and she hid with others in western North Carolina when the Trail of Tears started. And that's how she survived on my mother's side. My brother's in genealogy, and we follow that clear back. So Andrew Jackson is a tyrant. Now count how many people Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama caused to die. How many? Is that held to a different standard? Is that not legitimate? And now we have a president who is illiterate and as functionally mature as a 9-year-old. But what is especially sad is that we participate in this charade. As a society, we have crossed the Rubicon into the abyss of hostile negative emotions. At this moment, we witness people on both sides of the left-right political divide hearkening to their victimhood while actively participating in the destruction of society. And yet, there are no massive mobilized protests against the most destructive elements in our culture as if they are unimportant. Why no effort on renewable energy, access to healthy foods for everyone, freedom from toxic chemicals and everyday household products are otherwise banned in other countries, the illegal surveillance of the state, pervasive Wall Street corruption, a justice system that indentures the poor into debt bondage, the 50 million Americans living in abject poverty, and a thoroughly corrupt medical system, and life-threatening technologies such as 5G rollout, GMOs, and vaccines, none of these seem important enough to warrant millions to march or to protest. Even humanity's survival is inconsequential. No one cares. So when the entire survival of the planet is no longer important to anyone, what the hell have we become? Where are your priorities? My God, it's like we are prehistoric, beyond Neolithic. We're at a primordial stage where two dinosaurs are wrestling each other, and in comes the volcano's lava that will consume both, and they're indifferent to it because they're so engaged in their rage. None of these crises will face a reality because we've refused to face it. We are hidden from it. We distract ourselves with nonsense. Mind you, none of these problems we face are secrets, but publicly known. However, the average person is disconnected from a broader holistic vision that reveals how they immediately impact their lives in numerous ways. So despite the fact that iatrogenesis, which is medical error, and prescription drugs, will kill far more people this year and every year than a coronavirus, or that elections are bought by the highest bidder and completely corrupt, nothing changes. Bush and Obama removed habeas corpus, which is our constitutional right to have access to a fair trial, face our challenger, and yet there were zero demonstrations. Even with the many well-intentioned people who have brought the correct message to the public as a majority, have listened with deaf ears. Despite the decades I've spent educating people about how to live a happier and healthier life, probably only 5% of my own audience are making a determined effort to change their habits and behavior. Instead of running away from crisis, we are going to do everything to the contrary that magnify the problems. So if the environmental and social crisis continue to spiral out of control, understand it is because America is only exceptionally pathetic. The nation has indulged itself in Aldous Huxley soma far too long, and now we're witnessing its effects in the explosion of hatred, rage, and self-serving narcissism in the streets, classrooms, and Congress's kabuki theater and corporate boardrooms. We must cease believing that the bureaucrats and technocrats in Washington, Silicon Valley, and Wall Street will save us. They won't. They don't care about us. The wealthy and power can afford to move to Wyoming's Black Jackson Hole and to the Teton Mountains. But for the remainder of us, we're going to be living in Mad Max world. Sadly, our negligence, ignorance, and hubris has brought this emergency upon us. Nothing in all the world is more dangerous, wrote Martin Luther King Jr., than sincere ignorance and conscientious stupidity. And that's where we're at today. A whole generation of woke people are engaged in blathering, blaming, victimization, and they're as dumb as bricks, completely desensitized to the history of really what has happened to people and those who have forged forward and those who have made changes and those who have taken the worst of circumstances and made the best for themselves and society is better because of it. These people have no connection with the world we live in. They've all been raised in bubbles, including emotional bubbles of despair and narcissism. It is our deep ignorance about not knowing ourselves and appreciating our holistic interconnection with each other and the environment that perpetrates the suffering all around us. This includes our attachments to whatever accomplishments and failures we experience in our lives, which leads either to superiority complexes or apathy and depression. Nevertheless, even if there is only 5% of the population that are truly, truly awake, free of the cult of woke politics, culture, and conscientiously whole about the causes and effects of the events and catastrophes in our midst, that still represents approximately 18 million awake people. That is in itself sufficient to wage a conscientious revolution to bring about constructive change, nonviolent change. The oligarchy of neoliberal capitalism now governing the country will not change by itself. It will require very radicalized or impersonal forces to foment it to change from within. If that fails, each of us as individuals and then collectively has it within ourselves the capacity to make substantial changes. It requires the courage to break free from the shackles of blind conservative nationalism, tribal mentality, and irrational beliefs and faux liberal values in order to no longer be enslaved to a system that only acts in its own interest and where citizens are nothing more than collateral damage to its failings. All imperiums ultimately collapse. Although the United States is in its rapid decline, it is within each of us the means to not be a victim when it sinks completely. So that is it. The end is not near. We've passed it. If you haven't been paying attention, you will after you watch my new documentary coming out. It's going all over the world now and with great success. And I'll be coming back to New York to premiere it sometime in the early fall when people can go back into a theater, for example. So your thoughts. Some people are part of this so-called woke identity politics cult, but others of us are awakened and have been awake, but we're not communicating and organizing with each other. That was the whole purpose of a six-hour webinar yesterday, attended by a huge number of people, because we can no longer change the cities and what have been once meccas of culture, enlightenment, and creative opportunity, and the wonderful sparring of intellectual capacities is now, well, it is, the oasis has been desertified. And so it's time to realize this chapter in our lives are over and to seek more rural, pastoral, and beautiful environments to be in. So that's it. My article is posted on PRN.fm along with those new bios, which I want you to look because, remember, at some point, I'm doing this on behalf of all of the hundreds of thousands of people who do not have the resources to write or to legally challenge Wikipedia. But I've spoken with so many, Deepak Chopra, Robert Kennedy Jr., all of them, and they all have tried and have failed because the system is rigged. Now there's an effort by both parties to rescind their protection of not being sued under this one act. So I'm going to do a whole show on that because now we have a chance to remove that act so they can be sued directly with the Wikimedia Foundation. They'll be sued into oblivion. But right now we want to show why they have no legitimacy. While attacking one person, they're attacking every person using the same modus operandi. So I'm merely the canary in the coal mine. So everyone else who's been attacked and then felt helpless, their career shattered, their income reduced, their reputations destroyed. So I'm out there taking on the entire establishment for them. Because I don't care what they say about me, they're not going to destroy me. But they have substantially hurt other people. And the victims are people who can't benefit because they don't trust some of the therapies because it's been condemned as quackery. So that's why this battle is important. So after 53 years, I'm putting my video bios up. I'm putting my achievements up as an example of what they chose with malice of forethought not to include because it would have given a different image than the one of demonization they've posted. And they've done this with everyone, every single person they've done this with. So this is why I want you to watch the video bios, learn stuff, not that it would be important to you, but it's important for the cause. Share the articles. Watch the videos of the cures. I can tell you there's no physician on the planet, no one on the planet, that can show that they've done the same thing in 2 weeks with the people that those two, and by the way, these are all 2 weeks at a retreat, 2 weeks, and there's like 20 of them, 20. Take a look. 888-874-4888 is our number. 888-874-4888 is our number. I was going to do a part on homeopathy. I'll do that tomorrow. But a couple more things that I want to share with you today. This is from New York Magazine. Global warming is melting our sense of time. Now, what I got from this article after reading it is that we keep thinking we have time. And the Buddha said, you have no more time. You know, we're thinking in hundreds of years. We don't have hundreds of days. Within the next 100 days, you will have multiple extremes. In the last week, we had the hottest day in the history of records in the Arctic, 100-degree temperature. That the consequences are that thousands of miles of the boreal forest and the coastlines are going to have their permafrost thawed, and methane at huge quantities, unmeasurable, they're so large, are going to go in the atmosphere, and then the positive feedback loop, it gets hotter. Hotter it gets, the hotter, and then you go to 100 to 110 degree day in the Arctic, and then 120 degree day in the Arctic. Then possibly one of the hottest days on Earth happened in the Arctic, and that meant that everything below the Arctic is going to be adversely affected. You're going to have the loss of species, you're going to have bacteria and viruses that have been buried for thousands of years suddenly become active. You're going to have massive forest fires because of all the dryness and the heat. The consequences of the feedback loop are measurable. So it's important, and yet you wouldn't know it. Nobody's talking about it. All right? This is from Common Dreams. The Arctic is figuratively and literally on fire. Quote, warning sign of major proportions. Number of Siberian forest fires increases 500%. In the last week. So here's another one. The number of fires in the vast North Asian region of Siberia increased 500% just in the last 5 days. So you see, it's begun, and it's not going to end. Also, let's see. I want to make sure. Patty, I read her piece. I really think it's interesting. But we're going to have her on tomorrow so she has adequate time. So Patty will be on tomorrow. This is a scholar and an investigator who's looking at the actual history of some of these monuments. And for some of the monuments, people seem to be completely ignorant that they're not based on racism at all. Oh, and by the way, talking about racism, and if you're going to go after people because they're racist, how about going after Joe Biden? From the onset of his career on Capitol Hill, he reached out to right-wing segregationist senators from the South, including Jesse Helms and Strom Thurmond, to advance his legislative agenda against busing, a racist code for opposing black and brown children going to school with white children. That was Joe Biden who led that no busing in the Congress. He worked close with Thurmond, on the 1983 Comprehensive Forfeiture Act, which increased the use of civil asset forfeiture by police departments across the country. And since 1999, the federal government has taken in $36.5 billion in assets through civil forfeiture, a percentage of which was used to buy military-grade weaponry that was then allocated to local police and state police. So now when you see militarized police, thank Joe Biden for that. And also when poor people couldn't afford bills and they had their assets seized, that was Joe Biden. In his own state of Delaware, private school enrollment is among the highest in the nation at 17.6%. In Biden's hometown of Wilmington, the vast majority of them are white. Meanwhile, black public schools are systematically starved of funds. Thank Joe Biden. Instrumental in pushing for Clinton's 1994 crime bill that led to a huge spike, huge. Over a million more people went to prison because of the Clintons and Joe Biden in incarceration, especially African Americans. And he continued to support his decision in 2016. It led to a boom in the number of police officers in prisons, lengthening prison sentences, and created financial incentives to keep people in jail. It created 60 new death penalties, offenses, as well as the infamous three strikes and you're out rule, which gave a life sentence for almost any crime. That's Joe Biden. He called on Congress, quote, to require all welfare recipients to sign a contract in which they agree to work in exchange for their benefits. That's racist. That's Joe Biden. In 1995, he was among a minority of Democratic senators who voted in favor of Newt Gingrich's radical overhaul of welfare. That's Joe Biden. In the 1970s, while claiming to be a champion of civil liberties, he was consistently against busing. That's Joe Biden. In 1977, Angleton-Biden Amendment, which barred the Department of Health and Education and Welfare from using its funding for busing, became the bane of existence for civil rights activists and schools administrations around the country. That's Joe Biden. And through the 1980s and 90s, his tough-on-crime position, in fact, targeted the black community. In this issue, he stood with racist Strom Thurmond to shift the U.S. criminal code in a move punitive and unforgiving, direct, and it hit African Americans especially. That's Joe Biden. Biden brought up the names of Senators Eastland of Mississippi and Herman Talmadge of Georgia while speaking at a fundraiser Tuesday night. Eastland and Talmadge, two senior members of the Senate when Biden arrived in the chamber in 1973, were firmly opposed to desegregation efforts. So he was supporting segregationists and described African-American felons as, quote, predators too sociopathic to rehabilitate. That's Joe Biden. He voted for increased prison sentences, building up local law enforcement into a police state, and supports the private prison system. That's Joe Biden. He's made racist remarks, quote, if you have a problem, figure out whether you're for me or Trump, then you ain't black. Racist. That's Biden. While running for the 2008 presidency, issued what he thought was a praise of Senator Barack Obama, saying, quote, he's the first mainstream African-American who's articulate and bright and clean. Whoa. That's Biden. Biden was filmed talking to a man who appears to have been of Indian descent, quote, in Delaware, the largest growth in the population is Indian Americans. You can't go to a 7-Eleven or a Dunkin' Donuts unless you have a slight Indian accent. I'm not joking, end quote. That's Joe Biden. Poor record as a diplomat while vice president, who has always aligned with military regimes. He aligned with the military. He has said NATO's got it right in Libya. So, Joe, if NATO got it right in Libya, and these were mainly civilians who were killed and migrant workers who chose to work in Libya because they were treated fairly and decently and paid higher wages than any place else in the Middle East, and then they were killed, you're talking about 50 to 60,000 people were slaughtered, and that was okay? And that's not racist? A hard-headed neocon on relations with Iran, he was chair of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. He has called for sanctions against Iran in the past, but opposed attempts to label the Iranian Revolutionary Guard as a terrorist organization. He sides with Trump and Bolton and Pompeo on support of the terrorist who tried to topple Maduro in Venezuela. And he's also a self-described Zionist. He said on the Jewish TV program, quote, I'm a Zionist. You don't have to be a Jew to be a Zionist. Huh. Okay. Well, Joe, tell me something about the founder of Zionism and what year it was and who it was and how did he become the head of the Zionist movement? You couldn't because you're an illiterate. You're as close to an idiot as anyone I've ever seen. You're a Democratic version of Trump on so many levels. And if you're pro-Zionism, boy, are you a danger to the freedom of people all over the world, including the Palestinians. You're a mouthpiece for AIPAC and the Jewish lobby. You said in a 2008 vice presidential debate, quote, no one in the United States Senate has been a better friend of Israel than Joe Biden. And that's just Biden. That didn't even get into Clinton. So just remember, if you're going to take on an issue, make sure you do your homework. Look at everyone involved. All right? We're out of time, everyone. Thank you all for listening. Have a nice day.